Hi, folks. I'm Buzz, and I'm an alcoholic. I've said this probably every time. I'm not an expert on the steps, and I don't try to be. And this isn't a how-to. It's my experience with working the steps. And tonight's step 12. And so, here goes. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And to be honest with you, it's almost like it's three steps in one. Maybe Bill wanted it to end in 12, so he just jammed them together. I don't know. But having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps is the first part. And if you think about it, the words having had is in the past tense, because we've now been there. We've now been through 11 steps and we had a spiritual awakening. And sometimes I think that's what the steps are about. And I think it's another promise, because it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And the having had, in other words, it does not say we might, maybe we will, or we should. It's concrete, having had. So it is a promise. I'm going to read something from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions on page 106 and 107. And it says something like this. I changed a few words in it. When a person has had a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that they have now become able to do, feel, and believe that which they could not before on their unaided strength and resource alone. They have been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. They have been set on a path which tells them they are really going somewhere, that life is not dead and not something to be endured or mastered. I like that when they say it's a gift, because a spiritual awakening is probably the greatest gift you can get. I really believe that. You see, when I came to AA, I told people I was an atheist. And if you really think, in a sense, alcohol was my God. Miss Southern Comfort. And in a sense, you know, the state stores, they sell wine and spirits, you know. And I really, alcohol gave me the illusion of being spiritually fit. I've said many times in these 12 sessions that the 12 steps are not really about stopping drinking. They're designed for living. And I think, having said that, they're also a design for connecting with God as we see Him. The steps are about having a spiritual awakening or a connection with God that we as separate individuals understand. When I came in, as I said, I was an atheist. I don't think I was an atheist. I think I was just afraid of God. And I didn't really know what an atheist was. But I drank, and alcohol was a godless god. And I couldn't see God anywhere. I couldn't see it. And I came to AA, and after practicing the principles, these 12 principles, and working these steps, now I see God everywhere. When I come to meetings, I think that's where God talks to me, through you folks. I previously told a story about a sponsee who came in saying he was an atheist. He was abused by an organized religion and just had nothing to do. And actually, some of the things that happened to him were horrendous compared to what happened to me and my childhood and so forth. And he started to come around, and we were working through the chapter, We Agnostics, and I was talking about being an atheist and coming around, and he stopped me cold and he says, "Do you believe in God right now?" And I says, "Yes, with all my heart." And he asked me, "How'd that happen?" And that hit me because I didn't know. The truth is, I don't know how or when it happened. It was over time, but I can't put my finger on the day, like the day I know when I got sober, you know, I know what hour, it was 10 minutes to 11, was when I finished my last beer. But I couldn't know. It kind of crept in, and I started to believe, and it describes it in the chapter We Agnostics in the Big Book on page 47. And here again it says something like this: "We needed to ask ourselves but one short question: do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself?" And the first time when I got to step two, I told this story before, I wanted to drink, and I went to a meeting, and after the meeting I didn't want to drink. I went home that night and I stayed sober. I was 61 days sober, and the next morning I woke up with 62 days sober. And the thing is, I believed AA was that power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. It's the voice of reason. Because many times I quit drinking and I wanted to drink, or I started wanting to drink and I drank because I didn't think it through. And the program actually restores me to sanity. I don't know how many times I wanted to drink and I promised myself I could drink that night after I went to a meeting. And that's where I started. Not with God, but with that power. It goes on: as soon as a person can say that they believe or are even willing to believe, we emphatically assure them they are on their way. And the thing is, I opened the door just a little bit by saying, yeah, AA is a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. Let's face it, I always had a power greater than myself. It was Miss Southern Comfort. You know, it kind of restored me to insanity. I used to say I hated tequila because I called it my gasoline. It tasted terrible, but I drank enough of it to float a boat. I think you could have put it in your truck and ran it, you know, but I don't know. But anyway, that's exactly what happened to me, and that's my story. I want to tell a story that my second sponsor told. For a minute, if you can, just believe, or just make believe that you were blind right from birth, never saw anything but total darkness, and you're blind and you've kind of accepted you're going to die this way. And somebody comes along and says, "I was blind like you are, and now I can see." And you'd want to know how they did. And they said, come with me. I'll take you to a place." And they take you to a meeting. And you can't really see at first, but you go to this meeting, and the other people were all blind, and now they're seeing good. And they give you hope. You know, and I think hope is a great gift. And they give you hope, and you have hope, and you keep coming back. And pretty soon after a while, you start to see shades of gray and darkness. But there's shades of gray, and this is pretty good if all you ever saw is darkness. And you keep coming, and pretty soon these shades of gray start to move, and you see movement. And then pretty soon, it's like a black and white TV that's fuzzy, but it clears up. And then one day, you see colors and you see clearly. And that's kind of how AA transforms people. I go to a meeting on a Sunday morning where the rehab from the hospital upstairs comes down. And you can actually see that happen to the folks that are new. They come in, sometimes they're dope sick, sometimes they're just hanging on to themselves so they can't, so they don't jump out of their own skin. And by the end of 28 days, they start to come around, they start to breathe, and you can see they're starting to see the light. It's starting to come through that darkness. And if they stay around, I've seen guys come out of prison too. They have that prison 1,000-yard stare, and you watch that melt away. That's what that is they're blind, and what's making them see is the 12 steps that's practiced in this program. In this room, and there's probably thousands of AA meetings going on right now where it's happening. And that's what happened to me. There's a song and a line in the song, it's Amazing Grace. It's very popular. Probably everybody here has heard it. And it says, I once was blind, but now I see. And that's truly what AA has done for me, and it's done for millions of people. And if you're new here, it can do it for you. I've never seen it not do it. You know, people say, well, I went to AA, it didn't work. It's because they didn't work the 12 steps. They didn't give AA a chance. They came in, went to a few meetings, and never really surrendered. But I think it does. I think AA, and that's what it's talking about here, where having had a spiritual awakening, I think I could change that from, I wake up, I can now see. I can't get this apart. And I believe anybody that practices these principles will see better also. And it says that in the chapter to the agnostics too. The road's open to all. Never exclusive, inclusive to all. And that's paraphrased because I don't know. I can't tell you. It's in the chapter of the agnostics, but I didn't write it down. We tried to carry this message to the alcoholic that still suffers as the second part of that. I think it's a great message, and I said this before, I think AA started out with Bill and Bob with a spiritual connection from one drunk to another, and that happens. It happens all the time. It happens in this room. It's probably happening right now. And the thing is, that spiritual connection and that first meeting, people were carrying the message to me, and you know, they gave me that gift of hope. You know, I couldn't see clearly. Good God, I still drank for another 35 months after my first meeting, but it did give me hope. From the chapter Working with Others in the Big Book, and it's right at the beginning of the chapter, practical experience shows us that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry the message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very well ill. I drank for 35 months after my first. I went to meetings. I had a sponsor. I had a big sponsor, 6'7". And he, one night, he had to, I told this story early on, so I'm just kind of paraphrasing a little bit again and going over it. He had this 12-step, this girl at the university, and it was ethical if you're going to 12-step, a member of the opposite sex. You took a member of the opposite sex with you. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and he couldn't get a member of the opposite sex. So he got me, and I complained. I says, aren't you supposed to have a girl? And he says, shut up, or I'll make you wear a dress. And I mean, the guy was big enough to eat a bale of hay. He was big enough to make me wear a dress. So I went. Now, I had either 4 or 6 days sober. I don't know. And I'm thinking, what do I have to give to a new person? But I went there that night with him. He had 14 years. She was about an hour away from her last drink. And that spiritual connection wasn't with him, it was with me. And it did something to me. Because before, in that 35 months, I only stayed sober twice for 17 days. Once the first 5 days was in rehab or detox, and the other time the first 5 days was in jail, and they both, I kind of had an awakening on both cases, but anyway. But that helping her and that connection, that spiritual connection, it almost made like a contract where I had to stay sober. It was almost like I was committed then. And that's what changed everything. I've been sober ever since. Actually, she didn't stay sober from that night, but as I understand it, she's going on 20 years sober now, so she did get it. What it says right below that, in that working with others, life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover and to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot in our lives. And I find that to be true. I hear a lot, AA is a selfish program, but you got to give it away to keep it. And I that statement annoys me. And it annoys me for 2 reasons. One, I think AA is the most unselfish program, the most unselfish thing I've ever seen. And it just seems to me unfair to say it's a selfish program. And then the second part is where they say you got to give it away to keep it. We don't give anything away. We share. Now, I'm going to give you an example that you've probably heard before. Because it's pretty popular. About 2,000 years ago, there was this unemployed carpenter, and he was carrying the message to about 5,000 people, okay? And they had hardly any food, and they were hungry. So he had his sponsees collect the food that was there, 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. I'm kind of embellishing this story a little. But anyway, he broke it up and shared them with everyone. They all ate their fill, and the sponsees collected their leftovers. And they had either 5 or 15 bushels left over. Now, you know, that is what we do right here when we share. We don't give anything away. If I give something away, I no longer have it. You know, if I give you my truck, I don't have a ride home, you know. We share. And the thing is, everyone can take all they want. And you can divide the leftovers and take them to give them to others. You think about it. And the thing is, when I finish tonight sharing, when I finish, oh God, do I have much more than I had when I came here. I came here in November. No, October. October, yeah. I have so much more as a result of just coming here and sharing what was given to me. I'm sharing the leftovers that other people gave to me. The last thing Bill says is to practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, we've been through the 12 steps. We have to practice them. You know, I used to hear when I was in school, practice makes perfect. That's not true, but practice does make better. Okay? When I came to AA, my first AA meeting, I was impressed and wanted what you had. I wanted to be like you folks. No one sat me down with rules and told me I had to practice these principles, or I'd have been out the door, frankly. I'd have been out the door and I'd have died of alcoholism right then. I was 29 years old. I never would have made it to 30 if I'd kept drinking. Y'all just said, keep coming back. And no one taught me or anything. I just watched you as you practiced the principles. And the principles that I'm talking about are being practiced. Like I said, there's probably thousands of meetings going on right now. You kept encouraging me to come back. Even when I came in smelling like alcohol, because I'd just been drinking in the parking lot so I could get rid of the shakes enough to come in here chewing bubble gum with Aqua Velva all over me, and probably everybody in the damn room smoking a cigarette and trying to talk without breathing. You probably all knew I was drinking because it stinks, you know. You kept encouraging me, and I watched as you practiced the principles. I soon caught on and started to emulate you and started to practice these principles, probably just right with you people at first. But I wanted to be like you, and I was a fake at first, but something happened. I was a fake, but something happened. 39 years ago tonight, I was on a terrible run, a terrible drinking binge that would last till the end of May. And then, you know, back then, I never could imagined in my wildest alcoholic fantasies that I'd even be alive today, let alone doing what I'm doing tonight. But something happened. Something happened in this journey along the 12 steps. I'm going to switch gears for a minute, because I previously gave you an example of emulating. We learn by emulating. We learned English by emulating the people that raised us. They taught me English. They didn't teach me English. I just learned it by watching them. And that's my core language. I gave the example of Ricky Ricardo. He played in I Love Lucy. His name was Desi Arnaz. He was really from Cuba. And the language he learned when he was coming up by emulating was Spanish. But he learned English. But if you watched it, every time he got pissed at Lucy, he started speaking Spanish. Well, the thing is, my core language really is addiction, you know? And, you know, my core is restless, irritable, and discontent. And I learned to speak recovery through this program, these principles. But much like Ricky, I can also revert back. Several years ago, I was in upstate New York working on this cabin in the wilderness. And it took 6 hours to get up there, and I listened to Sandy Beach and Bob Darrell tapes on the way up. And I went to meetings, and here it is, a really nice day. It's a late summer day. It's just, I'm out there with a pair of shorts on and sandals, that's about it. And I'm putting in these glass windows. And I'm so spiritually charged. And I'm putting in the last of the trim on this window. It was 3 foot by 5 foot, a $60 piece of glass. And I just set that trim nail, and I must have hit the edge of the glass because it went. My spirituality changed right then. I said unchristian words at the top. The hammer went flying. Now, I was kind of in the wilderness, but there was other camps around, and if they were within a half mile, they're telling their kids, don't go down there. That guy's, see, I'm like Ricky. I can speak recovery, but I can revert back to speaking addiction. And that's why I keep practicing these principles. I'm staying sober today because I think I've done enough to be spiritually fit enough to not take a drink till I lose consciousness tonight. And I won't sit here and tell you I'm going to be sober the rest of my life unless I get killed on the way home. My bride's going, oh, jeez. I want to die like grandpa in my sleep, not like grandma screaming and hollering and strapped in the passenger seat, you know? But anyway, that's why I keep coming back. I want to stay sober. I want to stay sober today. And when I'm done with today and I wake up in the morning, I'm going to say my prayers and I'm going to try to do what I have to do to stay spiritually fit enough tomorrow to not take a drink. And that's about as far as I go. I really think because of the steps, it matters little who we are or what we do. If we practice the principles, we will be a better one. I think if we practice these principles, we'll be a better human being. I'm about out of time. I'm actually finishing early for me. It's time for, we'll have some time for questionings. But I would like to end by giving you something to think about. And this is something I heard a lot when I came in. And I don't hear it anymore. It's not really a slogan. It says, if you commit suicide without practicing these principles, you will kill the wrong person. And the reason I think that came about is because the steps change you. They cannot not. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result, having had. By the time you get to having had, you're not the same person that took that last drink. You're not that same person at all. Hell, I wasn't allowed in half the bars, and I wasn't allowed in any bars at one time in Cambridge and Edinburgh area because I never had a bartender say, good to see you, Buzz, keep coming back. It'll change that. I'm going to repeat that. If you commit suicide without practicing these principles, you'll kill the wrong person. And please, yell it to yourself. Just give it a try. You know, just give it a try. Actually, I'm done, but before I finish, I would like to thank Bruce and Kevin and Jill for, I know, God bless them. They're the ones that make this happen. And I'm glad it's over. They can find another. Oh, wow.
We have stuff for you.
Thank you. Wow. That's great.
Thank you.
Now I'm ready for questions. Yeah. Wow, this is really nice coin.
Yeah. Anybody have any questions?
Oh, he's got one right here.
He's raising his hand a little higher. I'm a tall person.
Thank you, Buzz, for sharing tonight. Really appreciate it. Glad it was here. So you talked about this, the first part of the step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. As a sponsor, you have a sponsee, and they'd say to you, hey, you know, I'm not sure I've had this spiritual awakening. I mean, is the thought there, do you think, that we should rest, not rest at 11, but continue to practice 11 and wait on 12? Or what's your thought about that?
One time, when I really started to convert and I started to believe, I said to this man, actually, I was on the trail, and his trail name was Heaven Bound. I said to him, but I still have doubts. And he said, you always have doubts. And the thing is, you know, I guess my thought is, more will be revealed. One gentleman tells a story about you're climbing a mountain, and when you get to the top, you yell back down, you should see what I see. They can't see what you see because they're not there. Your sponsee. And I think we really have to have a lot of patience with our sponsees. They're not going to have 10 years of sobriety until they have 10 years of sobriety. And they aren't going to think like that. More's revealed, and it's a journey. And I think as sponsors, speaking for myself, as a sponsor, I sometimes expect my sponsees to get it just because I said it. And the thing is, it's their journey. And it takes the time it takes. Does that make sense? Did that answer your question? Hi, Bridget.
Hi, Buzz. You spoke about the 12 step and being blind and starting to see. When is the first time you recognized that you started to see?
You know, my first meeting before I went to it, if you'd ask me if there was any way I could be an alcoholic, any way possible that I just might be, I would have said no way. And after that meeting, the man got up there and he told what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And when he sat down, we had that spiritual connection. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt I was alcoholic as much as I know it today. So I guess right from the beginning there was that glimmer. I started to see maybe shades of gray a little bit, and that's the power of AA. I got hope. We have some people in here that are pretty new tonight, and if I gave them just a little bit of hope, there's other people that'll add to the pile of hope after me. You just keep coming back. Does that answer your question? Thanks, Pigeon.
I knew it was going to happen.
I'm never getting out that early.
Buzz, thank you on behalf of the group and myself for, I mean, this is a commitment. When you ask somebody to speak 12 weeks in a row, that's
well,
a commitment.
Thank you, Kevin. It's like, God bless you. I mean,
and God bless you, and you made it through the winter, and that was
still standing.
Still standing.
Haven't
still
had a drink, standing. You know. I kind of wondered what it would be like when they say, are there any new members, if I would have reintroduced or something. Would that have changed things?
Might have. I don't know. Might have.
Okay. Go ahead. Buddy.
Okay. So now that we've done the 12 steps and the three parts to the 12 step kind of makes you start all over and use all the other steps there. If you were to, like, say, summarize the program 1 through 12, you know, say in a word or two about each step, could you do that for us just to wrap things up?
Well,
and how they all tie together?
Whew. Let me give it a shot. Well, the step one was the surrender. I can't do this. And my life, I can't control my life. The second is I came to believe that there would be a power besides myself, greater than myself, that could control my life. Step three, I made a decision to turn my life over to the care of that higher power. Step four, it's like any problem, you have to know what the problem is. So that was the inventory of what was wrong with me and what was blocking me from God. Step five is a second opinion, because I can't see myself as clearly. I told that story about spiders in my ear. You can see a spider in my ear. I can't, you know. Step six really is the second surrender, because the character defects, not the alcohol, but the other character defects that block me from a partnership with my God as I understand it. And step six, it's where I received enough pain from my character defects that I'm willing to surrender them. It's like the second surrender. Step seven is the work involved. You know, we don't get rid of anything by ourselves, but we have to help. God doesn't do it by himself either. Step eight is kind of humbly admitting the people we have wronged and harmed. And step nine is not only just doing what we can to make that right, but step nine is like a contract to quit doing that, so we quit causing. Step 10 is the mix of all the first nine. 11, you know, in everybody there is, I don't know if it's a voice, it's a feeling, a sense of right and wrong, a connection. And it's a little voice in the inside. And prayer and meditation is connecting with that voice. Sometimes it's called your conscience, your intuition, sixth sense, the Holy Spirit. I don't know, it might even be the voice of God inside you. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I know everybody has one. And that's what step 11 is connection with that and letting that be the guide. And 12 is what we just did. It's kind of giving back and being grateful.
All right.